Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 14th day of March, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Call. And how do we start off today? Because actually, folks, this is a fairly complicated day in the news, given that there are so many chickens coming home to roost, so many dots that need connection, and so much great, big, massive lying on the part of the waste stream, fake news, major media outlets. So let's start off today with this story, kind of a continuing saga. And I'll warn you up front, it's not the story itself that prompts its position here to lead us off. President Trump has ordered the grounding of all Boeing 737 MAX 8 planes, and the Boeing company has now issued a statement in support of the president's decision. Yes, they have full confidence in the safety of the 737 MAX and so forth and so on, but after consultation with the U.S. FAA and the NTSB and international aviation authorities and customers all over the world, they have determined out of an abundance of caution and in order to reassure the flying public of the aircraft's safety to recommend, go along with, in other words, the temporary suspension of operations of the entire worldwide fleet, all 371 of them, of 737 MAX aircraft. Said the president, planes in the air will be grounded upon landing at the destination. All airlines are agreeing with this. The safety of the American people and all people is our paramount concern, said Trump Wednesday at the White House. Hopefully they'll very quickly come up with the answer, but until they do, the planes are grounded. All of which sent Boeing shares, noted Zero Hedge, down to new post-crash lows. But the really interesting point here, in your host's opinion, is the power struggle over who gets to analyze the black boxes from the Ethiopian airplane's crash. As of Wednesday, said an airline spokesperson, flight recorders from that jet will be sent to a European country for analysis because Ethiopia lacks the technology to examine them. However, AP reports that a spokesperson for Germany's Federal Bureau of Aircraft Accident Investigation is telling them that their agency was asked by Ethiopian authorities to analyze the black boxes from Sunday's plane crash, but declined because they lacked the necessary software. So the German spokesman said he doesn't know where the black boxes will be sent, and other sources are saying, no surprise, that the U.S. has quietly pushed to be the nation that analyzes the black boxes from the Ethiopian Airlines crash. Evidently, no dice. But Liberty Blitzkrieg's Mike Krieger summed up the fiasco this way, quote, "The black box response from Ethiopia says so much about where the world stands today. Nobody trusts the U.S. anymore, and for good reason. We're very clearly in the twilight moment of U.S. empire," unquote. And it's evidently not just because of the high-profile nutcases and idiots like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Mad Maxine, Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff for brains, and the Mueller witch hunt masquerading as law while criminals run the swamp. There are things that go way back, like Syria, and Hollywood and Washington's no longer that well hidden pedophilia predisposition, and more recent questions, was or was not the U.S. complicit in the Venezuelan blackout and beta test? And this week there was the big high-profile higher indoctrination scandal. Says an appropriate Zero Hedge headline, "The college admission scandal is a perfect example of just how deeply corrupt America, with a K, I note, has become." So is there anything left in this country that hasn't been deeply tainted by that kind of corruption? And I guess, given that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants to get rid of airplanes altogether, and some, at least, in this country are just stupid enough to let her try, maybe the rest of the world is right not to trust the United States to look into the latest example of American decadence, or failure, or whatever it may end up being. So let's begin the dot connection with a couple of easy headlines to start things off. Here's one, Andrew Weissman, perhaps the angriest Democrat, and that's saying a lot, on special witch hunter Robert Mueller's probe, is now leaving the investigation, sick, and will return to the private sector. Yeah, time to go collect his bribes. This according to NPR, citing two sources. And this guy, they notice, considered the architect of the case, such as it was, against former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort. I can't help but think, mechanic is a better term there. And he will now teach at New York University. Hey, wonder how many people in the scandal will be in his classes and embark on a number of public service projects. Oh, I can't wait. But the key is this. NPR suggests, quote, "This departure is the strongest sign yet that Mueller and his team have all but concluded their work." sick, end unquote. Now, folks, the team wasn't able to find collusion or even fabricate enough to make a case for something which isn't a crime anyway, and he has, in fact, come under fire from what are called conservatives for his extreme liberalism. Zero Hedge notes he did attend Hillary Clinton's election night party in 2016 and was one of several officials told by then DOJ number 4, Bruce Ohr, prior to the DOJ obtaining their bogus FISA surveillance warrant, that the Steele dossier was in fact opposition research with clear connections to Clinton and just might be bias. Ironically, Weissman was head of the DOJ's fraud section at that time, and obviously they're really good at it. And the story does note that while Weissman's departure is the largest indication to date that the Mueller probe is finally winding down, maybe because they've run out of things to fabricate and people to coerce, other so-called investigators have already left that ship. So on then to other dots. President Trump's former national security advisor, the much-persecuted General Michael Flynn, has officially completed his cooperation with Mueller's investigation, according to a status report filed Wednesday. And according to One American News reporter Jack Posobiec, Attorney General William Barr, not a guy your host finds particularly trustworthy, given his deep state connections, who is overseeing, they note, the special counsel's investigation, is the one who told Mueller there just wasn't enough evidence to keep General Flynn around, and he needed to end his cooperation. Mueller's corrupt prosecutor, Andrew Weissman, yeah, that guy, pushed back, though, and wanted to continue to harass General Flynn, said Posobiec, all of which is an indication that Bill Barr may actually be reeling in Mueller's out-of-control inquisition. And that's a stark contrast to do-nothing Jeff Sessions and active cover-up facilitator Rod Rosenstein. And the Gateway Pundit's coverage does provide us with some useful background reminders as we begin to connect these dots. General Flynn, it says, was ambushed by corrupt FBI officials, they got a million of them, just days after Donald Trump was sworn into office in January 2017, whereupon he pled guilty to making false statements to the feds, which is only okay, of course, if you're a leftist. However, evidence later released proved that Flynn never lied to investigators. Nevertheless, he's still facing the prospect of up to 6 months in jail, not to mention already huge personal and financial impacts. So it's now clear that there are one set of rules for Republicans and the working people, and another for the deep state swamp critters and the Democrats who serve them. In December, Judge Emmett Sullivan abused and harassed Michael Flynn in federal court, even suggesting that Flynn committed treason for his work with Turkey, a totally unrelated case. Although, yes, it's true, Flynn did work with Turkey, as did the Podesta brothers. General Flynn and the Podesta brothers all filed their forms retroactively, but Flynn has been accused of treason, while the Podestas are free men with all of their wealth and, let's just say, shady connections still intact. Again, proving George Orwell's Animal Farm observation, some animals really are more equal than others. But wait a minute, I do have a bit of good news. Maybe there's still some hope the rule of law might actually break out somewhere near Sodom on the Potomac. Watchdog group Judicial Watch announced Wednesday a schedule of depositions of senior Obama-era officials, lawyers, and former Hillary Clinton aides. And thanks to the heavy lifting by Judicial Watch, Judge Roy C. Lamberth ordered these corrupt Obama and Hillary officials, says Christine Laylett, the Gateway Pundit, to provide answers under oath, as if that really matters, to the watchdog group about the Benghazi and Hillary Clinton email scandals. Any of which are, of course, a lot more serious, a lot closer to treason, and a lot more indicative of the state of the rule of law in America than absolutely anything the elected administration has ever been accused of. You may recall that Lamberth has already pointed out Hillary's corruption and said the State Department provided, quote, clearly false statements in order to derail requests for Hillary Clinton documents. And he noted that he was dumbfounded when he found out that Hillary's aide-turned-lawyer Cheryl Mills was given immunity, evidently for nothing. During the hearing last October, he said, quote, I had myself found that Cheryl Mills had committed perjury and lied under oath in a published opinion I had issued in a Judicial Watch case where I found her unworthy of belief, and I was quite shocked to find out that she'd been given immunity by the Justice Department in the Hillary Clinton email case, unquote. So here's at least a brief summary of the deposition scheduled to follow. It'll be interesting to see whether any of this gets reported by the likes of the criminally negligent news networks and the Ministry of Truth. On March 12th, which has already passed, State Department responses to interrogatories and document requests were due. Not that those dates make much difference in hindsight. But on March 14th, the deposition of one Justin Cooper, former aide to Bill Clinton, who reportedly had no security clearance but was nevertheless able to play a key role in setting up Hillary Clinton's non-government, non-approved email system. April 5th, we have John Hackett, State Department records official, quote, immediately responsible for responding to requests for records, or maybe not responding is a better way to put it, under FOIA. April 16th brings the deposition of one Jacob or Jake Sullivan, Hillary Clinton's former senior advisor and deputy chief of staff, followed by depositions through the end of April of Cheryl Walker, Jean Smolansky, and Monica Tillery, all senior State Department lawyers and officials. In May, we have Jonathan Wasser, who was a management analyst on the executive secretariat staff, working for Deputy Director Clarence Finney, and he was the State Department employee who actually conducted the alleged searches for records in response to FOIA requests. Then Clarence Finney himself, Deputy Director of that same Secretariat staff, who was responsible for control of all correspondence and records for Hillary and other State Department officials. Leading up on June 13th to Heather Samuelson, former State Department senior advisor who helped facilitate the State Department's receipt and release of the Hillary Clinton emails, and TBD, we have Eric Boswell, who wrote a March 2nd, 2009 internal memorandum entitled Use of Blackberries on Mahogany Row, in which he strongly advised against the use of such devices, given the problems that are oh so obvious in hindsight. But it's a list of higher profile names that must answer written questions under oath. I say again, will that really matter? That might raise a few more eyebrows. You have first Lauren Gelati, Clinton's former special assistant, and Monica Hanley, obviously Hillary's former confidential assistant at the State Department. And in hindsight, confidential is a really funny term here, isn't it? Followed by E.W. Priestap, yeah, the guy serving as assistant director of the FBI's so-called counterintelligence division, who helped oversee both the Clinton email and presidential campaign investigations. Sick. And yeah, cover-up is closer to the truth than investigation in that case, too. Priestap testified in a separate lawsuit that Clinton was the subject of a grand jury investigation related to her BlackBerry email accounts. Then there is Susan Rice, Obama's former UN ambassador, neck deep in this whole stinking mess for month after month, who appeared on a Sunday TV news show following the Benghazi attacks, and parroted the now incredible fateful lie about the hateful video that supposedly caused all of those things, rather than what really did. She was also, in case you've forgotten, Obama's national security advisor, sick, involved in the unmasking of identities of senior Trump officials caught up in the post-election witch hunt. And then there's Ben Rhodes, Obama-era White House deputy strategic communications advisor, who attempted to orchestrate the campaign to reinforce Obama and portray the Benghazi consulate terrorist attack as being rooted in that same infamous, quoting now, internet video. Not a failure of policy, or, for that matter, an act of treason involving release of confidential information to those who intended to do the ambassador, well, worse than harm, before he could turn state's evidence. About things like weapons being transferred to ISIS, fast and furiously. A couple more dots from an earlier release make sense to fill in here. The top brass at the Obama FBI went to great lengths to justify their decision not to recommend charges against you-know-who, Hillary Clinton, for mishandling of classified information, much less treason. Yes, according to Judicial Watch, which obtained evidence that the agency even created a chart of Clinton's criminal offenses. This, too, as a result of a FOIA request that the DOJ had been long ignoring, but finally got around to. They said the following: 3 days after then FBI Director James Hormeister Comey's press conference announcing that he would not recommend prosecution of the woman who would be king, Hillary Clinton, a July 8, 2016 email chain shows that special counsel to the FBI's executive assistant director in charge of the National Security Branch, SIC, whose name is Redacted, wrote to Strzok and others that he was producing a, quote, chart of the statutory violations considered during the investigation of Clinton's server and the reasons for the recommendation not to prosecute. Redacted continued, I'm still working on the additional page for these TPs that consist of a chart of the statutory violations considered during the investigation and the reasons for the recommendation not to prosecute. Hopefully in non-lawyer-friendly terms, in other words, ready for immediate release to the WAPO, CNN, and New York Times. Strzok then forwards this to Page, Jonathan Moffa, and others, saying, I've redlined some points. Broadly, I have some concerns about asking some of our senior field folks to get into the business of briefing this case, particularly when we have the D's, meaning Comey's statement, as a kind of standalone document. In my opinion, there's too much nuance, detail, and potential for missteps. In other words, we can't afford to let people not in the loop risk commenting on this. But I get they may likely be asked for comment. Unquote. Redacted then wrote to the usual suspects, Strzok, Page, and others, quote, the DD, and that means the criminal Andrew McCabe in this case, will need to approve these before they're pushed out to anyone. At the end of last week, he wasn't inclined to send them to anyone, and now, a long time later, it's obvious why, but he said it's great to have them on the shelf in case they're needed. Redacted also wrote to Strzok and Page, I'm really not sure why they continued working on these talking points. In the morning, I'll make sure Andy, and you know who that means, tells Mike Cortan, keep these in his pocket. I guess Andy just didn't ever have a moment to turn these off with Mike like he said he would. Whereupon Page replied, yes, I agree that this is not a good idea. And, of course, it goes without saying, given the state of the press in this country, that neither these talking points nor the chart of potential violations committed by Clinton and her associates have ever even been admitted to, much less released. There's a whole lot more in here, and basically it paints a similar picture. When people who are above the law are involved in criminality, mountains get moved to cover it up. Recall, says the summary here from Zero Hedge, that the FBI agents involved in this cover-up made extensive edits to former FBI Director James Comey's statement exonerating Hillary Clinton, changing the language to effectively remove any reference to something which would clearly be criminal, so they wouldn't be forced to charge her with the crimes they know she committed. And yes, on that score, there's the December 2017 letter from Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee Chairman Ron Johnson, Republican Wisconsin, to then FBI Director Christopher Wray, as well as fired FBI agent Peter Strzok, noting that they changed the language regarding Clinton's conduct from the words gross negligence, which is literally the statutory definition of the felony, to extremely careless, which is not only a charge-worthy legal term of art, but an actual defense to what they know she did. Even so, it does beg the question, what is somebody who's so extremely careless doing in any kind of a position of responsibility, much less a cabinet-level position? And now we know the answer, running a criminal operation. Bottom line, says the story, thanks to Judicial Watch and their FOIA requests, eventually having been fulfilled, we now know that the FBI also went not only the great lengths to cover up the crimes, but justify letting Clinton off the hook, with a chart of her offenses, no less, that's still never been released or even acknowledged by most of the ministries of truth. Now, at this point, I do have to at least mention the following. It's a continuing story, running in excess of 10 parts by now, written by Joe Hoft and published via the Gateway Pundit. It's an exclusive, they say, about the uncovered FBI DOJ cover-up of the Clinton Criminal Foundation and Russia-China-related crimes and treason. A 2016 DOJ criminal investigation, it says, was suppressed, who could have thought it, and buried by partners in crime, the DOJ-FBI, and it involved a major New York State Democratic power broker, Attorney Martin Edelman, Bill and Hill, and the Clinton Foundation. The investigation also revolved around the illegal sale of controlled U.S. Homeland Security technology, and this, too, is real treason to Russia and China in the years leading up to the 2016 investigation. The DOJ terminated its internal investigation despite clear and irrefutable evidence of criminal activity, and then, of course, did what they've gotten really good at doing, hid it from the public. Now, the story is indeed quite complex, and that's how the big criminal syndicates know to do it, to cover their tracks. And it involves a major firm called AGT International, a firm that the Clintons evidently helped create and then did all it could to generate revenues, even if that meant flagrantly breaking U.S. law and committing treason. Here's as far as we'll go for today. In and around the year 2007, Martin L. Edelman, New York attorney with Paul Hastings, LLP, and a Bill and Hitlery close friend, and one of their largest donor bundlers, met Mati Kochavi, who reportedly made his fortune in the New York City real estate market. They came up with the idea of forming a group of companies and purchasing other companies that would develop and sell homeland security and intelligence solutions in the U.S. and worldwide. Edelman became chairman of the board, and Kochavi, the CEO of their company, named AGT International. And their expertise sounds literally like the go-to of Big Brother Technologies. They leverage three, says their website, of the most compelling current technology trends to revolutionize public safety and security. Yeah, sure. The Internet of Things. Think 5G, whether you like it or not. Big data analytics. Yeah, Gulag fits there. And cloud computing. Ditto. Our advanced proprietary software, they say, powers cloud-based knowledge solutions that make connected sensors and data accessible and delivers services that aid complex problem solving. They're privately held with headquarters in Switzerland and proud of their diversity. AGT went from zero to over $8 billion of contracts and $1 billion in revenue in about 5 years. And, of course, the story notes the Clintons were well compensated for their support and endorsement by Kochavi and Edelman through payments to the Clinton Foundation, totaling many millions of dollars. Subsequent stories go into some detail about the worldwide connections between the Clintons, AGT and their principals, various Middle Eastern entities, and, of course, Russia and China, as well as the illegal sale of U.S. technology that was ITAR-EAR-controlled and U.S., think about this for a second, State Department-regulated, including advanced intelligence systems, surveillance, thermal cameras, sensors, radar, C4I, and cyber warfare systems that were, in fact, sold to Russia and China in the years before the 2016 election. And yes, there supposedly was a DOJ criminal investigation. Kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? And that was suppressed and buried as well, also before the 2016 election. So if you're wondering, and you should be, what does all this say about how deeply corrupt a formerly free republic has become, other than the obvious, which is that it looks more like a banana republic than a free one? I hearken back to Michael Krieger's statement with which I began this sequence, that nobody trusts the U.S. anymore, and for good reason. And by the way, it's not just criminal socialists that call themselves Democrats that are knee-deep in this. There are plenty of rhinos on board, too. Case in point, briefly, former Rhino Speaker of the House, Paul Rhino Ryan, who blocked subpoenas of Democrats, and maybe eventually we'll find out the whole story there, too. But in an interview released by Breitbart on Wednesday, the president indicated he wasn't the least happy about that. Ryan kept promising to fund the Trump border wall, too, and along with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell promised something between $12 and $15 billion to build the invasion-proof border wall back in January of 2017. And even though they had a majority in both houses, then they lied. Ryan didn't once include funding for the Trump border wall in any financial package since President Trump's election, until the president finally threatened the shutdown. Oh, but as the Gateway Pundit reminds us, Ryan and McConnell did, in fact, fund a border security barrier in both Tunisia and Jordan. And as we wrap it up for today, we note that a lower court has again decided that the United States doesn't have any real borders anyway, and at least some courts are looking to abolish all immigration enforcement to boot. And again, we turn to the Ninth Circus, where, despite Congress having explicitly stripped the courts of any jurisdiction to hear such claims, the black robe priests there have ruled that while natural-born Americans may not still have a right to things like habeas corpus, the rest of the world does. And any illegals that manage to get across the open borders can now stay indefinitely, and that'll entice new ones too, while they milk what's left of the nation dry. Corruption indeed, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.